This is an excerpt from Fauci, the Bernie Madoff of science, and the HIV Ponzi scheme that concealed the chronic fatigue syndrome epidemic. Scientific totalitarianism is the background music of Anthony Fauci's brilliant and long-lasting Ponzi scheme. A so-called liberal democracy like America demands a covert form of scientific totalitarianism that does not scare the horses of oversight and public opinion. Fauci knew how to manipulate the levers of institutional power and image-making in ways that Bernie Madoff would envy. For a scientific Ponzi scheme to prevail in America and Europe, nobody must recognize that they have acquiesced to a major medical and scientific fraud. Doctors must follow protocols established by the HIV/AIDS Ponzi scheme, and patients must not question them. Sanctions should stand at the ready if they do. Nobody must see the telltale signs of fraud, deceit, and censorship. I coined the term Bob Club to describe the sycophantic journalists who enabled the massive scientific fraud of disgraced National Cancer Institute researcher Robert Gallo. The Tony Club is even worse and consequential in ways that will take medical historians generations to fully illuminate. A long list of servile journalists who were chummy with Fauci and enabled his Ponzi scheme will have a lot to answer for. An intimidating voice, a good haircut, and suits that fit will go a long way in science, especially if you are as skilled in the art of veiled and not so veiled threats as Fauci is. It took a great deal of industriousness to cover up the role of the HHV-678 family of viruses in AIDS, chronic fatigue syndrome, and a myriad of immune disorders that constitute the real AIDS epidemic that the Ponzi scheme conceals from the public. To keep the entire NIH establishment from dealing with chronic fatigue syndrome and its relationship to AIDS for almost four decades took a great deal of persistent effort. Fauci is not stupid. There's no way that some part of him didn't recognize that serious chronic fatigue syndrome research would have easily brought down his whole HIV house of cards if it had been officially acknowledged. Even noting publicly that it was uncanny the way any little bit of chronic fatigue syndrome research showed the illness was similar to AIDS would have threatened the Fauci Ponzi scheme. The HIV house of cards and the wall that separates AIDS and chronic fatigue syndrome are the Fauci legacy. The recognition that he got AIDS wrong because he got chronic fatigue syndrome wrong and vice versa would have turned him into an instant disgrace in the eyes of his friends and family. The egregious self-esteem he had carefully nurtured from the early days in Brooklyn would be a plate of Bethesda toast. In my career as the publisher of New York Native from 1980 to 1997, I had one phone conversation with Anthony Fauci in which I heard his petulance and thin-skinned nature in real time. I called him after I had written an editorial that was critical of Fauci in the form of a satirical poem. As readers probably already suspect, Dr. Fauci does not have much of a sense of humor, especially when it is directed at him by someone in the media who does not know their place. I suspect that his desk at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases is surrounded by eggshells. I believe that even though my newspaper went out of business in 1997, New York Native remains a thorn in his psyche to this very day. I doubt that he can hear the words chronic fatigue syndrome, HHV6, or Peter Duisberg without thinking of New York Native. Two of my reporters paid a price for their association with New York Native. He was dramatically rude to one reporter when she showed up on the same TV show with him. He refused to shake the hand of another reporter when he was introduced to him at a medical conference. Not surprising, since Fauci said in an essay that members of the media would lose precious access if they didn't play ball. I will give credit to Fauci for being astute in recognizing my newspaper as his bête noire, because it does contain all the journalistic ingredients necessary for his eventual downfall. In my book about New York Native, The Chronic Fatigue Syndrome Epidemic Cover-Up, you can watch the evolution of the Fauci Ponzi scheme from the beginning of the AIDS epidemic into the early years of the deftly handled chronic fatigue syndrome cover-up. From my experience covering the CDC and Fauci's antics, I now believe that scientific totalitarianism is fertile ground for medical and scientific Ponzi schemes. And when you find scientific Ponzi schemes, you know you have also encountered a culture of scientific totalitarianism. From watching Fauci and his public health puppets closely, I have constructed a list of the elements necessary for a successful public health Ponzi scheme. One, nosological fraud. That's the branch of medicine dealing with the classification of disease. It is ground zero for public health fraud. Two, epidemiological fraud. Three, virological fraud. Four, treatment fraud. Treatments that harm more than they heal or conceal more than they reveal. Five, public health policy fraud. Six, concealment of negative scientific data and paradigm-challenging anomalies. Seven, use of an elite network of old boys and pseudo-activist provocateurs to censor critics and whistleblowers. Eight, chronic obscurantism. Nine, if necessary, vigilanteism and witch hunts against any intellectual scientists or citizens who constitute any form of resistance to the Ponzi scheme. 10. A subservient scientific press that is used as a conveyor belt for the Ponzi scheme propaganda. Anthony Fauci has been richly rewarded for his ability to keep this Ponzi scheme going, just as Bernie Madoff was for his. Fauci is one of the highest paid people in the government. I leave it to historians to sort out how much he made from his scientific Ponzi scheme. Journalist Terry Michael was working on a book about Fauci's ill-gotten gains, but unfortunately died before he could finish it. If you search Google for articles or blogs that are critical of Fauci, except for a few notable examples, my work and Hillary Johnson's, you will come up empty-handed. Journalism about Fauci tends to be uninformed, uncritical, and lionizing. When Bernard Madoff's Ponzi scheme was eventually exposed, it was shocking how obvious the scam was. Boston's financial analyst, Harry Markopoulos, the man who figured out what Madoff was up to, told 60 Minutes, quote, "It took me 5 minutes to know that it was a fraud. It took me another almost 4 hours of mathematical modeling to prove it was a fraud," end quote. There was no shortage of people who discerned the glaring irregularities in the science that bolstered Fauci's Ponzi scheme. In addition to the reporters at New York Native, there was a fascinating group of scientists and intellectuals I discuss in my book, Peter Duisberg and the Duisbergians. In some ways, you could say that Fauci's Ponzi scheme has survived for so long because his critics were too nice. Assuming that norms were being maintained, they were often collegial, hoping that reason would prevail. It would not. They would politely make their points in a Fauci universe where critics were welcome to get jobs at Starbucks. You can't reason with someone who has Fauci's power and administrative long arms because at all times he is running and protecting a criminal enterprise. His fake science is always covertly fighting for its life. Two communities especially have failed to grasp the nature of Fauci's HIV Ponzi scheme and paid a terrible price for it. The gay community and the chronic fatigue syndrome community are now victims of a massive epidemic associated with the HHV-6/7/8 family of viruses. I will have more to say about this in a future book, but anyone who wants to explore the implications of the HHV-6/7/8 epidemic should check out the over 3,000 posts on my website, HHV6 University. It's very sad that the chronic fatigue syndrome community has never challenged the HIV-AIDS pseudoscience of Anthony Fauci. While there is a great deal of CFS-related hostility towards Fauci, it generally revolves around neglect of chronic fatigue syndrome rather than the cover-up of the obvious fact that what has been called AIDS and what has been called chronic fatigue syndrome are really just two different faces of one epidemic driven by the HHV-6/7/8 family of viruses. When new retroviruses were found in chronic fatigue syndrome patients by scientists Elaine de Freitas and Judy Mikovits, the work was not discredited just because the retroviruses would show that CFS is real. The truth is that it was undermined because the work threatened to show that chronic fatigue syndrome is just another iteration of the AIDS epidemic. Judy Mikovits, the scientist whose work on XMRV, a mouse retrovirus she claimed to find in CFS patients, was initially the object of international adulation from the CFS community. But a scientist connected with the AIDS establishment pulled the rug out from under her work by de-discovering XMRV, to the great disappointment of the CFS patients and activists. They could have turned the tables on scientists who sent Mikovits into exile because of her retroviral findings. They never asked whether HIV could have been de-discovered as the cause of AIDS if it had been as critically vetted as XMRV. I believe that one day historians will conclude that finding a retrovirus in CFS patients would have sent scientists quickly down a slippery slope to the understanding that HIV is not the real cause of AIDS and AIDS is not HIV disease. what has been called AIDS is on the spectrum of illness caused by the HHV-678 family of viruses. And that would not be a good development for Anthony Fauci's brilliant Ponzi scheme. Because Fauci is close to retirement, he may never have to answer for the crisis he has created. I have spent more than half of my life covering his scientific Ponzi scheme. I am hopeful that the books that I have written since the demise of New York Native will help future generations clean up the biomedical, political, and cultural mess left by the Fauci Ponzi scheme.